Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abamon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week, we're telling the wildest occult story behind the development of a system of angel magic known as Enochian. It's an unbelievable tale of espionage, a biblical apocalypse, European royalty, and the folly of genius. So breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. One. Okay, welcome back to Discourse with myself, Abamon the Great, joined as always by the lovely Dr. Anna Stone.
Hello.
And this week we're doing something really fun. I am so excited for this episode. We are doing the story of Enochian magic of John Dee and Edward Kelly,
yes.
Which I think is the most fascinating story in the occult. Every time I go back to it, it just pulls me back in. So we're basically doing like a historical occult story time. Now this topic and subject has been done to death. There's like History Channel specials on it, like all kinds of stuff. But for those of you guys that aren't familiar with it, you are in for a wild ride.
Yeah. I think we have very differing opinions perhaps of like,
yes. But it's got everything. Yeah. It's got magic. It's got angels. It's got demons. It's got, you know, scandalous sex, like Game of Thrones, espionage, like,
yeah,
it's when I was first exposed to the story, I couldn't believe that it was real, you know, even like if you don't believe in the occult aspects of it, the story itself is absolutely insane.
True. And I have a connection to it because one of my ancestors is Mary, Queen of Scots from the House of Stuart. Right. And he was imprisoned for casting a chart to see when she would die for Elizabeth I, who's also in my family tree. So I'm not in any way, shape, or form related to him, but the people that employed him and imprisoned him, very, very distant relatives. So that's kind of cool.
So
for me,
for those of you guys that aren't familiar with it, so John Dee and Edward Kelly are famous for developing a system of magic known as Enochian magic, which is very popular in modern occultism.
Yes.
It's syncretized into the Golden Dawn and it's syncretized into Thelema. And then there are people that are just like pure Enochian magic reconstructionists that try to practice it the way that John Dee and Edward Kelly did.
It's also very reminiscent of Mormon religion.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's the same story as Mormons. It's Joseph Smith's seer stones and the hat and whatever he did. All that is the story was already written.
Yeah, that's what I love about this story is you can see it played out. Like if you have the eyes to see, if you know this story, you'll start seeing it all across history happening to people.
You know, Joseph Smith was into the occult, right?
Yes, I do.
This is
my hot take that I've always said,
oh my gosh.
Like I've said since day one, since They're I first entered the occult and I learned about this. This was one of the first occult stories I learned about. I learned about this and I was like, oh this is the story of the Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, sure.
I was like, Joseph Smith was a...
He stole it.
Yeah. I was like, he did the exact same thing that these guys did.
He's literally Edward Kelly, like, reincarnated.
Yeah.
His whole entire... Like,
even
it's nuts.
The untimely demise. So we're going So we're going to talk about the story of Enochian magic, and it starts in the Renaissance, smack in the middle of the Renaissance.
Right.
John Dee, I think he's born in...
And he's born in 1527, July 13th.
Yeah. Born in 1527, and he's a really smart guy. He is an archetypal Renaissance man.
Yep.
He loves everything. He was famous for geography. He's mostly famous for mathematics.
And cartography.
Cartography, cryptography. But he's mostly famous for mathematics. He's responsible for a really important mathematical work on Euclidean mathematics or the Euclidean geometries that is still taught in colleges today, right?
Yeah.
But so he was this like really smart, well-respected Renaissance guy that had his fingers in everything, but he
was really, really interested. Like, he was a pious Christian, and he was super interested in the occult.
These pious Christians, yeah. I mean, it just blows my mind, because what they're doing is literally considered blasphemy by the church, right?
Yeah.
Especially now. I mean, back then you could get on a live for it, right? But now, I mean, if any of the people in church found out that their pastors were doing this kind of stuff, oh yeah. My gosh.
Well, yeah, there's, oh man, like, I just wish Mormons will never...
Oh, they're going to hate us right now.
Mormons will never run into this story because they're like so insulated from that stuff. But
true.
This literally, Joseph Smith was doing the same exact thing that, no, that John Dee was.
Joseph Smith just copied the story. It's a carbon copy.
Yeah, and he was a Freemason. So, you know, of course he's going to be exposed to this, the same techniques.
So I'm saying,
you
know? It's like, well, how many people know about this? Not a lot.
Yeah.
So I can just recycle that story. I mean, I don't know. The only difference here is, I mean, do they have seer stones in museums?
What?
Do they have any of Joseph Smith's seer stones anywhere?
I think so. I know they claim they have his artifacts or whatever. I don't know if they actually do.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't either. But we do have some of Edward Kelly's and John Dee's.
Yeah.
Or allegedly.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as we know. But so we do have some evidence that this actually happened. Is it recorded in history?
Oh, it's so recorded in history, because this was an incredibly important time in history. So John Dee is born in 1527. Right. This is smack in the middle of the Renaissance. The Americas had just been discovered, right? There's so much political turmoil that is happening in Europe as the Catholic Church is losing its grip.
Right.
And the different countries are kind of establishing their own politics outside of the influence of the Catholic Church because of the Protestant Reformation. The Protestant Reformation is happening. And then John Dee, he's over in England. And this is a very important transition, too. It's one of the most famous transitions in the English monarchy. So John Dee... at first, he ends up on the absolute shit list of the English monarchy because he cast an astrological chart predicting the death of Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My ancestors.
Yes. Bloody Mary. And so he ends up on the shit list. He gets imprisoned, but he also casts a chart for Queen Elizabeth saying that she's going to take her
place. It was for Queen Elizabeth to find out when she hurt, you know.
Yeah.
Was it her cousin? Her cousin, right? Mary was her cousin.
Yeah.
Sister. Mm-hmm. They're sisters. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know, when's my sister going to die so I can take over? And so he told her.
Yeah.
And then he got arrested.
Yeah.
But then Mary actually pardoned him and let him out.
Yeah. So, and then died a year later.
Yeah. Right.
And then it went over to Queen Elizabeth,
right.
And because he had cast this astrological chart, like, he
determined her day of coronation and all that, which was a good timing because it was right before the Armada, right?
He did electional astrology, so that's how he cast the chart that was saying that Bloody Mary was going to die. But then once Queen Elizabeth was about to take the throne, once it was transitioning over, they went to John Dee and they said, hey, use that cool electional astrology that I'm always rambling about to determine when's the best day to do her coronation, right?
Yep.
And so he elected that, and this kind of ingratiated him in the royal court.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like a Protestant, like the new Anglican church, right? The Protestant environment. And there's tons of these rumors flying around about John Dee being a sorcerer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he managed to like kind of keep that at bay for a long time.
Yeah. The common folk did not like him, but he was the pet astrologer of Queen Elizabeth and the court, and he had ingratiated himself with them by like doing all this astrological work. So they kind of like, he wasn't protected from the church, but he was protected politically, right? But that didn't offer him too much protection, just that he wasn't going to get in trouble
enough to where he could put an advertisement out in the paper.
I don't know.
Okay. I'm not sure what they had. Did they have papers? I'm not sure. But he put an advert out for an assistant to help him do scrying. Like, so that was the advertisement. Was he put it out there, and nobody came to get him.
Yeah.
You know. Well, Maybe they did.
Yeah, there's one guy.
Perhaps they did.
And enter Edward Kelly.
Edward Kelly.
And he is the complete opposite. So John Dee is this well-respected. I mean, when John Dee was 25 years old, he was giving lectures at Cambridge. That was just like, they didn't have seats. People were in the windows, like trying to hear him speak on math, dude. Yeah. Like, that's how popular he was. Well-respected, Renaissance, intellectual. And Edward Kelly comes along. And this guy had just got booted out of France for digging up somebody's grave.
Oh, yeah, necromancy.
For grave robbing.
Yeah.
He had no ears.
He had been convicted of forging official documents in Lancaster, and he was pillared, so he's stuck in the stockade thing, you know, with your head and your hands out in the wood, and then they cropped his ears, which was what they did back then, so that you were marked for life that you're a criminal.
Yeah.
And so he just grew his hair out over it.
Yeah.
Nobody knew.
So this guy's the total opposite end of the spectrum.
Oh, and he had a fake name.
Yeah.
Edward Talbot.
He was very much notorious, like, criminal scoundrel.
Yeah.
And people knew him as, like, a necromancer, a black magician, charlatan, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And, he was on the run actively when he met Dee.
Yeah.
That's why his name was not his real name. He was going under Edward Talbot. And again, for forgery. So the second, he didn't learn from getting his ears chopped off. He didn't figure it out. He just kept doing that. And to much the chagrin of Dee's wife, Jane, both of their wives' names were Jane. Edward Kelly and John Dee's wives were both named Jane. But Dee's wife was like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
Did not like this guy at all. But despite his bad vibes and despite his seemingly charlatan persona, they took him in and like started paying him, you know, him and his family. Like,
so he was, John Dee was paying Edward Kelly 50 whatever, what, euros?
I have no idea.
What did they use back then?
Coins.
It's like 50 pence.
Maybe.
Wacky Tudor money, whatever it is. I don't know. It's like a penny winkle or something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Some weird British stuff.
Yeah.
But they're paying him this sum annually to be an investigator. And that was what it said on the paperwork that Edward Kelly was John Dee's investigator, but what that really meant was his scryer, his seer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, because he told Dee, I can do this. I can scry and get this information for you. Because he had tried a lot of other people. He tried to do it himself, right?
Yeah.
And he couldn't do it. And then other people that he worked with were not successful. And then Edward Kelly comes along and he's just got it.
So that's the thing about Edward Kelly. It's like the guy was totally a charlatan and he was totally a criminal, but I don't doubt in my mind that he had abilities. You know, this is kind of par for the course for sorcerers and black magicians. It's like, you have some abilities, but like, you know, sometimes those people are criminals, you know?
I mean,
I
guess it's kind of like a narcissist here. It's like seems very narcissistic, like his grandiose ideas about himself.
Yeah.
But it's also really possible he was a plant, because what else was it about John Dee that's crazy? What is that little fact about John Dee that like everyone knows this one guy's name?
Oh yeah, so yeah, this is my fun. Yeah,
James Bond.
He's the first James Bond. This is my fun little fact. Most people don't know about this.
Yeah.
But so, 007, 007, John Dee was the world's very first double agent.
Yes.
He was a spy for Queen Elizabeth, and he signed all his letters to her 007.
Yes.
Because he was a cryptographer, and so he had like codes that he would write in, and 007 was how he would sign his name. So 007 comes from John Dee, the world's first Britain's first spy.
Correct. Yeah. And also the person that coined the term the British Empire, and also created the Navy, the British Navy, and the libraries, right?
Yeah,
the big library. And he did all those things, very highly respected, yet again, like we're saying.
Yeah.
He was well respected, mostly until Kelly came into his life.
Yeah, until Edward Kelly came into his life. Before then, he was like such a powerful, like Renaissance mind. He had like the largest library in Europe at the time, which was 4,000 books, which at that time, that's a ton. That's a ton of material. He had hand collected a lot of that material traveling Europe himself. Yep. A lot of it was handwritten. But he was such a powerful Renaissance mind that he would get accusations from his contemporaries all the time that like, there's no way you could, you know, be this much of a badass, you're working with demons, you know? Yeah. So he would get accusations of sorcery and that kind of stuff. And he would basically say, no, I'm not a sorcerer. But at the same time, he's definitely into the occult and dabbling in occultism and that kind of stuff. But he's got it justified that he's doing it. You know, he's deeply pious. He's always praying to God and he does it for God and that kind of stuff. So he...
So that was his motivation, but Kelly's motivation was money, like straight up. Well,
okay, so yeah, Kelly's that's the thing. Kelly's motivation was money. Dee's motivation was patronage and fame, right? Like he wanted to be a well-respected person. Yeah. So you see with John Dee is, they're both chasing a type of success.
Yeah.
But Kelly wants to be rich and Dee wants more to be like...
Legacy.
You know, like the you know, lifestyles of the rich and the famous, that, you know, like he's constantly trying to make friends with royalty and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and Kelly is like, I can do that for you. Like I got all the, I can do the philosopher's stone. I can turn lead into gold.
Yeah.
And that's what he promised. And that's what all these things were all about eventually, right? Is about the ability to transmute materials from not valuable to valuable.
Yeah.
And that would be his ultimate mistakes, big mistake of touting that for too long and not producing results, right? So,
So they started working together and they start scrying and it immediately
into stones. Okay, so they're scrying into true stones.
Yeah,
right.
That, right there.
Okay. Yeah. We don't know what it looks like. They said it says that some of them, they don't know. They have a couple crystals maybe, but like they're not sure that those are actually used. But like we'll pretend that they're spherical shaped things. And like he's scrying into them and then he's coming back and saying, oh, the angels told me, angelic, right? That's what he called it, angelic. That was a language. And it was, you know, ciphers, right? So like he would get the information tapped out. Like Morse code, I guess, or something. Backwards. The first word would be backwards, and the other two words would be normal.
Yeah, whatever. So those are the huge tables that they use in Enochian magic, and there's like a language that goes with it, but a lot of times they would communicate in these ciphers, and you'd have to go around these big tablets.
Ticker tape came out of the angel's mouth and just spelt the word out for them, he said.
Yeah.
Those English ones.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was interesting. Okay. So I had never heard that one before. I'm not sure. Did they get the actual paper?
I don't think so. No. There's like two supernatural events that are like written down in Dee's diaries that were like big for them.
Is that when Dee got the crystal given to him?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What was the other one?
I can't remember the other one.
I think it's the tape thing coming out of their mouth. Because like I just was reading that and I'm like, what? Like that's, and it only happened once, it said. But so maybe that's what it was. But so they said it's either a crystal ball or a mirror, an obsidian mirror. That's another one of the artifacts that they have that Arthur D. gave to the museum. So his John D.'s son, right? But allegedly only Edward Kelly was able to talk to the angels, right?
Yeah, so it was a typical conjurer-scryer relation, like... conjuration, right? And it's something that me and you prod around with like trying to figure out exactly how it works, because there's not really like too many practical manuals, not really a practical manual on how to pull it off.
No,
but basically
so
what happened, what would happen, Edward Kelly goes into a kind of trance and he starts scrying and he starts saying the information, and John D. is writing the information down, decoding it using his various tools and that kind of stuff, and Kelly's describing what he's seeing in that kind of thing.
Right. And like, yeah. Okay. So the only reason that I even continue to have a little bit of like reserve about whether or not this guy was totally baloney is because of what we've encountered during our channeling sessions.
Yeah.
That I didn't know about previously until after it happened. And then you told me about it with the backwards words. You know, I didn't know that. Like,
creepy,
I just,
right?
That was creepy because I didn't know that. I mean, I literally just looked all this up today. Yeah. You know, I didn't know any of the story before. I mean, I knew who they were.
Well, that's why I wanted to do this so bad, because this story is going to scare the ever loving shit out of you.
It did. It scared me.
And you're going to get a little insight into why I get crazy about what we do.
Yeah. I mean, that happened.
Because I have seen this
before.
What we do, I have seen it before. like, really creepy. Yeah.
I know, except for
that's why I get all like, you know, like, oh, what are we doing?
Right. I mean,
you know?
But like, at some point here, it's like these guys are losing their minds. Like,
yes, they are losing their minds. Yeah, yeah. But so they're scrying together and they're getting these messages, and they meet in 1582, and then around 1583, this guy, what's his name? Albert Lasky. That's right. Okay. So he's Polish nobleman.
Yeah, yeah. He's a banker. Okay.
He ends up coming to England and talking to Queen Elizabeth, and he wants to ingratiate himself with John Dee. You know, he's really interested in what John Dee's doing, and John Dee has this guy come over and he's having dinner with him. So John Dee's whole thing is John Dee is constantly broke because he's a crazy
scientist. He makes no money.
He's a scientist. He's broke. During this time in Europe, it's like if you were a Renaissance man, you were seeking a patron, like some nobility that was going to fund you to do science or art or whatever it is you're doing.
Sugar daddy.
Yes, exactly. So this is what Dee is looking for the whole time. And the common folk in England and in Mortlake, his home, they think he's a sorcerer. They do not like him, right?
Yeah.
And so even though he's held in high esteem by Queen Elizabeth and is her pet, like the people around her are just like, you know, this guy's kind of like weird. Like we don't want to attach our names to him. And so this guy from Poland, this nobleman from Poland, Lasky, comes over, and Dee immediately starts trying to like, oh, here's like a nobleman, he's probably got money, you know? And he basically just spills beans on what him and Kelly are doing. He's like, yeah, so we're summoning angels. Like, why don't you like join us? Like that kind of stuff. So this Albert Lasky guy starts joining them in conjurations, and the spirits, the angels that they're getting into contact with, immediately starts stirring up this Lasky guy, saying that like, you're going to be the rightful king of Poland, you know? And this guy's like, hell yeah. Like, he's like, this is great, you know? Yeah. So he's joined this little club with them. They're like talking to these spirits that are just like feeding them all this stuff and getting them all excited, which terrestrial spirits, Iamblichus, they coincide the contour, right?
Because that's not what happened. He went bankrupt.
Yes.
Homie went bankrupt like right away.
So they're getting all excited, and Lasky's trying to get Dee and Kelly to go out to Poland with him.
Yeah.
Because he wants them to meet the king out there, King Stephanus. And meanwhile, the spirits tell Dee and Kelly that there is a plot to imprison them for their occult experiments or whatever amongst Queen Elizabeth's court. And so Dee packs up his family, packs up Kelly, packs everybody up basically overnight, and they flee.
That's in 1583, right? Yes. They flee to Poland.
To Poland with Lasky. Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we're good. And then
they almost get shipwrecked too on the way. Like on their way, their like boat is falling apart. They almost get shipwrecked. So this is like this miserable crew. It's like this like random Polish noblemen. Like Dee and Kelly, their servants, their family, and that kind of stuff.
This is like the person you meet at a nightclub.
Yeah.
You know, you and your friends are out. Yeah. You get some straggler that like all of a sudden you're real bonded with because you're on
he's
one.
Like on the ride. You know what I mean?
And now all of a sudden this rando is like in your like little group of people, and they're just like clanging on, and you're, and then at some point you're like, who the hell is this guy? You know, like, yeah. Right? That's what I see in this situation.
Dude, it's like this story is like, I love totally this story tracks. So much.
Like
yeah.
Many times I've gone out and like met one of those people, and like they're just like, we don't need you anymore. Thank you.
Yeah.
But then so after he goes bankrupt and like he can't be their patron, okay?
Yeah, well, no, he was bankrupt the whole time.
Well, right, but they realized it.
Yeah, he was telling them. He was telling them while he's immortal. Like, he's like, oh yeah, like I'm just like waiting for some things to come through. Like, yeah. And so Dee and Kelly go out there thinking that this is going to be their patron. They get out there, and realize this guy's broke as hell.
Yeah, he's like homeless. He's like living in bushes. But then like Kelly's like, I gotta consult with the angels again. Yeah. So he consults with the angels again, and they tell him some batshit stuff. They're like, hey, you and Dee should go to visit the Holy Roman Emperor. Rudolph the
Thicket. No, not yet.
What happened between them?
Not yet. So there's this King Stefanus guy in Poland, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so So the angels start telling John Dee and Edward Kelly they need to go talk to this King Stefanus guy, and these guys are conjurers, and they want these angels, the spirits, want these magicians to walk into a court in Holy Roman Empire. Europe, HRE Europe. Uh-huh. Yeah, walk into the king's court and tell them what's going to happen.
That you need to reform your ways.
Yeah, that you need to reform your ways.
You need to stop what you're doing.
And Dee and Kelly are like...
And they did it.
Yeah, well, they're like, you know, this is scary. Like, I don't want to do this. And then the angels start reprimanding them, like, you know, you're going to do it. This is the will of God. Like, start pulling out, like, biblical stuff on them. Like, Abraham was going to sacrifice.
I legitimately believe now, like, now that this is, like, I did this research earlier and I saw this, but it didn't quite click, that there is suspicion that Edward Kelly was actually a plant from Elizabeth and Dee's enemies to get in and undo him, be his undoing.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm starting to think that's probably accurate. Because look, he's over there going, I'm talking to the angels. Okay. Yeah. You're telling me you got to go over to the Holy Roman Empire and tell them that they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And they need to knock it off or else. Like,
yeah.
That's crazy.
So
like, that's
yeah.
nuts. And then, he did that a lot. Like with the church inquisition, the whole thing, Dee's great.
You're skipping ahead. Don't skip ahead.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. You know, but I'm just saying there's a pattern here.
Yeah. We got to tell a story.
Yeah. So go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, and Bathory is Countess Bathory's relative.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That crazy lady.
Yeah. King Stefanus is Countess Bathory's relative. It's Stefanus Bathory. But so this Lasky guy like has a moment of clarity and realizes he's like, these guys are nuts. I don't want anything. He has like a moment of clarity like a year later. He's like, I'm gonna stop playing around with whatever these guys are doing. And they go to King Stefanus and they like tell him like all these predictions, and none of these predictions come true that came from the angels. They're like, yeah, you need to reform your ways, or you're gonna lose the throne and that kind of stuff. None of this stuff happens. So King Stefanus is basically like, you know, you guys are suspect. He doesn't like them. They're trying to ingratiate themselves with him because they want him to be their patron.
Yeah.
He doesn't like them because the predictions don't come true. Right. And they basically just threatened him, you know?
Yeah. And told him that they were wrong.
And he knows that John Dee is a spy for Queen Elizabeth. So he's just like,
nope.
You know, they need to get out of town, get out of town really fast. And so the angels start telling them that they need to march over to Prague.
Emperor Rudolph II,
who is actually a fascinating occult figure in himself. He was the occult emperor. He was an emperor obsessed with occultism and alchemy. And so he had like a bunch of occultists and alchemists come into his court. And he was basically just financing all these occult projects.
Right, because he wanted to turn...
He wanted to make gold. So at this time, Prague was... he was the emperor of Bohemia. And Bohemia has a lot of tin in it. So they got all this like worthless metal, and they're like, you know, we want some silver, we want some gold, you know? So Rudolph was trying to convert all that tin into gold using alchemy. to make himself richer.
Yeah.
But the angels end up telling Dee and Kelly that they need to go down to Prague, talk to this Rudolph guy, have audience with him, and make him change his ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they do that.
That he was a sinner. Yeah. Yes. Like basically saying like he was a sinner and he needs to repent for his sins and that kind of stuff.
That's nuts. And he fell for it.
Yeah. So this is actually surprising. So John Dee's speech, I should have printed it out so I could read it, because John Dee's speech is like ballsy, dude. Like so ballsy. Like I'm like biting my nails as I'm reading it. Like this guy's gonna get his head chopped off.
But
Emperor Rudolph like ended up taking it like really well, like listened to him and was just like, this is really fascinating. Exactly. So
they're on it.
He doesn't flip out, but he's like, we'll have a meeting, we'll discuss this later.
And I would be like dying.
Dee's like finally like, yes, we got it. Yeah. Like we found our patron, and he sets up camp in Prague, and they end up in Prague for a while.
Yeah.
But they're in communication, the nuncio, which basically
so then the church is like, hang on,
the Catholic church is like, dude,
these fools,
these guys,
we have been hearing about them since the necromancy incident, okay, back, you know, when he was in trouble for digging up a body, Kelly, right before he met Dee, so that he had been avoiding this for a minute, and then finally it came to fruition. They had to go sit in this inquisition kind of thing, right?
Yeah So the nuncio, which is basically the ambassador for the Catholic Church in Prague, you know, he learns Dee and Kelly are there, and he's like, hey, like we need to have to talk. And so they're like sending letters back and forth with each other, and it was funny because the nuncio is trying to convince Dee and Kelly to go to Rome. They're like, no, he's like, no, you can go to Rome, nothing's gonna happen to you there. And like Dee's like almost falling for it. Like Dee's like seriously debating walking into Rome after going and threatening all these like kings and emperors with these spirits he's been conjuring during the freaking Inquisition.
Yeah, about like, witchcraft. Like, you know,
this guy nuts. Is a nut job, just, yeah,
these are
dude.
Women. They're dead. They're gone. Like, this never would happen with women. They would have been immediately. No, you know, this is. But then. But so it said that he handled it pretty well. But then Kelly did not. Kelly was like, said some shit that he shouldn't have said.
To the nuncio?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Oh, he said, one of the problems with the Catholic Church is the poor conduct of many of the priests with young men.
No way.
The nuncio noted in a letter that he was tempted to toss Kelly out the window. And it says, quote, had so filled that most reverend lord with inward fury that he had said, if it had not been for certain respects, he would have had the said Edward thrown out of the window. Defenestration was a traditional way of dealing with troublesome opponents in Bohemian politics, which was throwing somebody out a window to their death.
That's crazy.
And so that nuncio said, like, I was so filled with inner fury about that. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Anyways, so he had a big mouth. Like, you know, he said it, but that's what I'm talking about. So Dee handles it, you know, diplomatically in that moment. But then over there, you got Kelly like, you know what? You guys,
I would have been the same way, dude.
But like, it's like, is it to get him in trouble?
Ew, no.
You know, I'm saying no, if he's I a mean, plant, well, like, yeah, if, you so, know, it would be to try to,
I don't know,
cast dispersion on him, right?
Yeah. So the, yeah.
But so then after that, what happened? Pressure was put on.
Yeah. Well,
second.
Well, yeah. So I mean, before that, we have to talk about how this entire time this is happening, they're going absolutely broke. Like they're having to sell all their stuff. Mm-hmm. And Dee's wife actually writes a letter to the angels, the spirits. They're begging these spirits for money the whole time. And the spirits are basically like saying, oh, you'll be rewarded. Don't worry. You know, in the meantime, sell all your furniture, all your clothes, because you need the money from that in order to survive right now. You know, So they're selling all their stuff because they're going broke.
And, is like, he still paying?
Dee's charging, like, in charge of this, like, gang of people, you know, like, servants. Dee's got 8 kids.
Okay,
you know?
Okay. Is he still paying Kelly and his family?
Yes, yes. And he's still paying, Kelly. And
until Kelly sees that he's not going to get paid. Starving. So he's like, Angel said, yeah, you got to sell all your stuff.
They're starving and they're going broke. And Dee's wife ends up writing the angels a letter, like, please give us some money. And the angels basically tell her, like, no, who are you to question the will of God? This is God's will. Like, you better sell your clothes because that's the only way, like, you're
starving
right now.
That's the only way you're going to pay me, Edward Kelly.
It's like, dude,
it was just bullshit.
Yes.
This guy was like,
this is insane. And Dee's like,
okay, we gotta
do it. Guy is like,
Angel said,
it's the will of God. Like,
Kelly's the only one who talks to this said angel. It's just like Joseph Smith. The only one we got. It's the same story. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just, wow.
We're gonna take a break really quick, though. We'll be right back, guys. Okay, we're back from our break. Now, where were we? Prague, right?
We're in Prague, and it's about time where they're going to get expelled.
Yeah.
Because Rudolf II was like, all right, the church is now involved. You guys are out for necromancy and other prohibited arts. Okay. Mm-hmm. But in 4 months' time, he's like, oh, never mind, come back. And lets them come back. And this happens a lot. Like, it keeps happening. Like, they leave, they get kicked out, and he just keeps letting them come back for some reason.
Yeah.
And they started doing so when they got back, when they got expelled and came back, my research says that they then undertook a series of the alchemical experiments. And in December of 1586, Dee recorded in his diary that Edward Kelly made a public demonstration of the Philosopher's Stones in the proportion of 1 small grain upon 1 ounce and a quarter of common mercury and produced almost an ounce of most pure gold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were big. So they refocused, like, their stuff with the angels. They were trying to get
money?
Forgot his name. It's like St. Dunstan, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
They were convinced that this St. Dunstan guy, he had the actual recipe to create the Philosopher's Stone. So they started asking the angels to help him make sense of his book. And the angels fed this just huge backwards mishmash of, like, gibberish that Dee was obsessively trying to decode or whatever. And they refocused their efforts with the angels on doing that. But the angels are constantly making these, like, crazy demands that they to go to different countries, and they have to basically just walk into royal courts and accuse royalty of, you know, sinning and or else they're gonna die and lose their throne or whatever.
Yeah. And when that doesn't work,
what
happens? What are they asked to do?
Yeah, so then we get to the most famous incident. So before we get to the notorious incident, the whole time that this is going on, John Dee is convinced that he's in contact with the angels from the Book of Enoch.
Right.
Right? Because they talk a lot about a cataclysm, and they're talking about, they're saying that they are giving them the secrets, the celestial secrets that nobody else has ever got before.
Oh, sounds familiar.
Interesting. Nobody else has ever got before that. They are handing them the celestial wisdom, and that, you know, really making Dee feel important.
He's chosen
and he's got some kind of secret, and this is kind of like leading Dee on. And so Dee is like so invested in the idea that these are angels, and they're the angels from the Book of Enoch, because you know, they talk about a cataclysm all the time. They talk about mm-hmm. what happened in the Book of the Enoch all the time. Whole time this is happening, Kelly is calling them demons. He doesn't want to contact them. Dee is forcing him to scry.
Right.
Kelly keeps trying to quit. He's like, he's like, I don't like these things. I don't trust them. These are obviously demons. I'm not going to call them angels, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Like Kelly did not want to get in contact with these things. He basically convinced that, you know, they're dealing with demons and evil spirits, but Dee wouldn't have any of that. He's like, because he's an incredibly pious man, and he's also, his weakness here is like his ambition, right?
Yeah.
So he is so ambitious, and he wants to do so much good that these things are able to deceive him.
Yeah. I mean, to the point,
self-importance.
To the point where he's like, his own 8-year-old son's up for... You know, like, yes. Hey, let's train my 8-year-old to summon these things instead of you.
Yeah.
You know, and that didn't work. So,
yeah. So Kelly ends up quitting finally.
Mm-hmm.
In
well,
yeah. So Edward Kelly quits, and his, and Dee is devastated. And he's like, well, I've got an 8-year-old boy, you know, I'll make him scry. Right.
Yeah.
And, so he's got his 8-year-old son sitting in front of this crystal, getting into contact with trying to conjure these things. And his 8-year-old son isn't able to see anything or do anything. And this is going on for 3 days. And then finally on the third day, Edward Kelly shows back up and retakes his position. He's like, okay, like I'll scribe for you. Yeah. Like get this kid out of here, you know?
Yeah.
And
now
this is when the famous incident happens. So the most notorious incident that Dee and Kelly are known for is while they're staring into the crystal, the angels instruct them at first to come into union with each other. And you know, they're like Dee's basically like no homo, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah,
not
yeah.
gonna do that. No. And they're like, well, what if you guys wife swapped? Then basically, you guys are like touching the tip.
Yeah, yeah. This know? Is Uriel because, allegedly yeah, yeah. the angel Uriel telling them to.
Yeah,
bang to each wives, swap. Wives. Yeah,
yeah, uh-huh. And so
and the wives are like, no.
Yeah, Dee really doesn't want to do this, and
yeah.
because it's like to him so immoral because he's like a good Christian man and that kind of stuff. But you know, the angels get to him again. They're like, you know,
oh no, Kelly keeps going and having more sessions to confirm this is really yeah. the instruction, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
So uh-huh. so the angels are like pulling out these. You know, biblical stories like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and yeah. all that kind of stuff. It's like they had faith. Like, why can't you have faith? Like, this is ordained by God. This is God's will.
Yeah. They also allegedly tell Kelly on April 4th that he's barren. He's sterile. He can't have kids. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which he then goes and reports back to Dee. Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? And then a month and a half later, they do it.
Yeah. They finally do it.
At once. Right? It was only one time?
Yeah, it was one time.
Right, and that was the end of it.
But yeah, it was enough to destroy their friendship and destroy their families.
And make a baby.
Yeah. And
9 months later, a little yeah. baby was born. What was his name? His name, I have it here somewhere. It's kind of messed up. I'm serious, I would be so pissed. But yeah, they, you know, yeah, 9 months later, exactly. That's why I find that conversation about being sterile suspect.
Yeah.
Really, I do. It's like, this is my, you know, because John Dee's wife was a lot younger than him
mm-hmm.
by 30 years or something. Mm-hmm. And Kelly was 28 years younger. So mm-hmm. they were like his, Dee's wife and him were around the same age.
Yeah.
I think he just wanted to hook up with the wife and he was upset.
I don't know about that. I feel like this is Dee's fault.
You do?
Yeah, totally.
Why?
I 100% believe that Edward Kelly, as a shitty of a dude as he was a victim of John Dee. 100%.
Why? I mean, I think, well...
Because when you read, like, the story and the course of their work together, Kelly constantly does not want to do it.
Yeah.
He's consistently trying to get Dee to knock it off.
Yeah.
And he's like... Like, he doesn't want to keep working with these things.
Yeah.
And these things are the ones that are misleading them in destroying their lives. And Kelly can see that. And yeah. Kelly's like, why, like, these things aren't giving us money. We're destitute. They're constantly getting us into trouble, you know? Like, we're basically traveling gypsies all over Europe, just going from country to country, yeah. getting in trouble.
They're
with
nomads, right?
Like, in complete, like, putting ourselves in dangerous situations. He's like, I don't want to do this. And Dee is, like, the one that he's got his head, you know, yeah, said, like, this is the will of God, and, you know, these are angels, and who are we to question them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like everybody there was victimized by Dee's hubris, and by his self-importance, and by his ambition.
Well, you're right. I mean, you could be right here, because it did, in the research that I found, it said that the last time they did a session together was the day after they wife swapped, mm-hmm. which was May 22nd, 1587. And that's the last spiritual consultation that they had together, although he kept doing it with other people.
Yes.
Afterwards.
Yes, he did. He towards the end of his life, we'll get there, yeah. but yeah. So after the wife swap, Edward Kelly's basically like, F this guy, you know, like I hate this guy. And he
ditched out.
Yeah. He splits back to, Prague to go meet up with Emperor Rudolf. He splits back there, and he's basically like, hey, I ditched that loser D, you know, like,
yeah.
I'll like, let me be your guy. And so Emperor Rudolf hires him as the Bohemian state alchemist.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Well, you are the not state so cool, I guess. Alchemist.
Well, yeah, until you can't produce gold. But yeah, Emperor Rudolf makes Edward Kelly into a baron, gives him a bunch of land, a bunch of money. And he's like, you're my alchemist. You know, you're my core alchemist. Then you got to start producing gold. And Edward Kelly, being the guy that he is, he's a criminal, drunk, gambler, like that kind of stuff, basically pisses through everything
right
instantly and immediately starts defrauding Emperor Rudolf.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's taken his money, and he's also living in all these different houses. And I don't know what he's doing in there, but other than trying to make weird creatures and such. You know, he lived in the Faust house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so everybody thought he was doing black magic back then. So he was not well liked or received. Right. But his, you know, like, yeah, his family started to get ostracized, right, a little bit. And his stepdaughter was lucky she got out. She's a famous poet, Westonia, right? She had all these Latin, Neo-Latin poems that are, I just read some of them before I came on here. They're very old-timey language, but, you know. Apparently, she's more read than Shakespeare, which I did not know. I've never heard of her before. You know, I actually had heard Westonia, but I didn't know that was Elizabeth Jane Weston, who's his stepdaughter. But so she was actually trying to help him out during all this, like with money, you know, trying to, whatever he was doing, burning through it, whatever he was, I don't know what he was doing with that money.
Yeah.
But he started to get on the nerves of his patron a bit. Right. So what happened? What did he do? He promised what? What did he promise?
Well, he said, okay, I can make your gold for you, right? Mm-hmm. And then obviously wasn't able to do it.
Well, he made silver, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, he made things into silver.
Yeah, there are legends and rumors with two witnesses. I can't exactly remember their names.
Oh, I got it.
But this is like the normal story for alchemists. Yeah. There's always like this is always how their successes are, they're shrouded, and it's like, well, there were these two witnesses there and blah blah blah, like that kind of thing. But he wasn't able to produce the gold, and so Emperor Rudolf imprisoned him, life imprisonment. He was like, you know, you're done,
right?
And at around this same time,
but what about the murder? Because he was in prison the first time for murder.
Oh, okay.
So in 1591, Rudolf had Kelly arrested and imprisoned in Prague for supposedly killing an official named Jerry Hunkler in a duel.
Mm-hmm.
It's also possible, most likely because he didn't want him to escape the city without paying him back. So he maybe jumped, like, I don't know if he did this or not. There's no records of whether or not he actually did that. But he was imprisoned for that. And then he agreed. Fine. I'll make the gold for you. Right.
Yeah.
And then he was, as soon as he agreed to that, they returned. He just like, okay, you're back to your normal status in the tower. Go do that. Yeah. Right. But what happened?
But yeah. So around the same time, John Dee, he basically wants to go back to England. But he's like so ashamed, so embarrassed, like his reputation is destroyed. And so he starts sending letters to the Archbishop of Canterbury, basically forsaking all of his work, trying to defeat the sorcerer accusations, never revealing what he was actually doing magically, saying he doesn't practice magic, he's a philosopher and that kind of stuff.
And a liar.
I don't know if Dee believed that or not. You know, like Dee very well could believe that he was... Like, I could see Dee thinking of himself like, no, this isn't magic. I'm talking to angels. And this is celestial philosophy, you know? Like, that's very much what the environment was there, especially if you were into magic. It was like, if you were doing magic, you might be telling yourself stuff to justify why it's not magic, right? And especially, like, back then, like, astrology, like, is that magic, you know? And so then how far... At that time, it's a science at that time. It's bordering on magic. This is right before the Enlightenment. And then so how far, like, you're just taking it to the next step. Like, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, deal with the spirits. I mean,
it's mental gymnastics, right?
Yeah, a lot of mental gymnastics. So I don't know if Dee believed that about himself or not. But he's pleading with Archbishop Canterbury. Queen Elizabeth's still there. And she's like, okay, you can come back. And then...
Barely.
Yeah. And then Edward Kelly... you know, he wants to go back to England too, so he tries to escape.
Well, they get her to write a letter, like to be like, hey, release him.
Yeah.
And the idiot decides this guy it's like the Keystone Cops of like escapes, okay? Like this guy three times escaped, each time fell down the tower and broke his legs. And at one point had to have amputated, right? It's like, so he was able to get just had calmed down and just slowly went down the stairs or whatever happened. Yeah. He would have been free because there was people waiting for him to take him, but he got injured so badly that he couldn't be taken. And he had to go back inside to his captors and be rehabilitated the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second attempt to escape ended up breaking his leg in three places. And having to be amputated. And then the third attempt, he broke it again. And then when he died, there's different accounts of how he died. But, you know, the one that is on record is in 1674, Sir Thomas Brown, an acquaintance of John Dee's son, Arthur Dee, stated that Kelly was, quote, imprisoned by the emperor in a castle from whence attempting to escape down the wall, he fell and broke his leg and was imprisoned again. And then that happened two more times. And then he poisoned himself in front of his wife and children to not have to suffer anymore. But then other people say he was thrown out the window.
Yeah.
It finally happened.
So the account I read was that he fell out of the tower, broke his legs and his pelvis. And then he succumbed to diseases related to that a few days later.
Right. And then, but Emperor Rudolf II had already, at this point, was way this guy's not even legit.
After dealing with all these occultists in his court, he basically tapped out of dealing with alchemists and magicians. Like, he was super interested in it for a while. And then he got burned by so many of them that he was just like, this is all fake. This is lame, you know?
Yeah. I mean, then there was a whole, so there's multiple stories about how he died, right? Kind of.
Emperor Rudolph?
No, about Kelly.
Oh, Kelly, yeah.
There's multiple stories, and it's either that he fell or was thrown or poisoned himself. Mm-hmm. It's one of the, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
We have more more history recording on how Dee died than on Kelly.
Yeah, so Dee actually lived a lot longer. Dee lived until he was 81. That guy was old.
Yeah, he lived a lot longer.
But he ended up going back to England. He got put in a position of basically a professor, I think, in Manchester, or it was at Cambridge, but he got put in a professorship position. Mm-hmm. And while he was there, he was like kind...
Christ College in Manchester.
Manchester, that's it. Okay, yeah. He's like very like grateful for his position, trying to like clean up his name and that kind of thing. So he's like, I'm a hard working philosopher and like trying to get rid of the sorcerer allegations, but mm-hmm. he could never shake them. Right. No. So he was there for like 8 years or something before he finally, decided he was going to go back to Mortlake, where, you know, go back to his home where he spent the last of his years, and he died destitute and slowly. But during that time, he's still trying to get scryers to contact these freaking angels.
He sure is. Yeah. You know, I mean, and all this, you know, all of these things that they did are the foundation for a lot of the magical orders, right?
Like, yeah. So he dies destitute. Mm-hmm. He's completely destroyed his family. Most of them hate him.
Yeah.
He's ruined his reputation. Nobody takes him seriously. He ends up getting under, like, after he like all this work that he's done in the occult, in magic, it is not out there, right?
What about the priests that come to him for exorcism advice?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. So
that's the only kind of clout he still had was regarding exorcisms.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because everybody believed he was dealing with demons.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, who are you going to, well, you know, this guy claims he's a Christian and he's got rumors of being a sorcerer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a lot of priests came and consulted with him for possessions within the church while he was still at Christ College, which is interesting because I never heard anything about possessions when I was doing my research, other than that part. So what do we get from him? But
yeah, so his material is basically gets lost, it gets scattered. So when they first fled Mortlake, when they left for Poland, the villagers, townsfolk, whatever, they stormed Mortlake, destroyed all his equipment, destroyed his library, scattered it. Mm-hmm. So most of his library got absolutely destroyed. Some of it made its way to private collectors, to random chests in some person's attic and that kind of thing. And then when he finally died, all those years later, his personal notes once again went through the same process.
Yeah.
Right. So nobody really knew the full details of what he was doing. But there was a Merrick Casaubon that wrote a pretty soon after he died, that wrote a pretty massive attack on John Dee, very, very famous attack on John Dee, basically denouncing him for all of his occult experiments with what little material he could get a hold of. And that was kind of how John Dee was remembered, by that Merrick Casaubon polemic. Basically calling him a charlatan and a fraud with what little material he had. Well, there was some of his notes were found in a chest. That's what Merrick Casaubon was working off of. But some of his stuff made it over into the London Library. And that was kind of lost in the archives until it was rediscovered by a little man known as Samuel Mathers, who started the Golden Dawn.
Hmm.
And Samuel Mathers was absolutely like blown away at what he was reading. He had discovered some of the missing pieces of Enochian magic.
Yeah.
And he started reassembling it from what he could find. And then since then, there's been a slow rediscovery of Dee's notes and materials. Random people will have them, private collectors will have them, libraries will have them.
I mean, so a couple things here. Like, first of all, so 53 years after his death, his son, or like 53 years after the incident with the wives, rather, Arthur Dee gave one of the crystals used by his father and Kelly to the apothecary Nicholas Culpepper as a reward for having cured a liver ailment complaint of his with the greatest rapidity in 1640.
Yeah.
According to Culpepper, This was the crystal that had been given to Dee by an angel in 1582, which Dee gave to Kelly, who gave it to Lord Rosenbark Burke, but then he retrieved it somehow. And he, Culpepper records, quote, "I've used this crystal in many ways and have thus cured illnesses, but with its use, a very great weakness always sets in and lethargy of the body. And further, a certain demonic apparition, which exercised itself to lewdness and other depravity with women and girls, used to tempt me, but by making the sign of the cross and speaking these words," and then he goes on to speak some incantation, I'm not going to say, "that it left," right? "But it left an evil smell of sulfur behind it." And that's his account. And then also another person, he then gave it to somebody else, and that person recorded that they conjured up a female devil, lewd and monstrous, and then they gave it to the Welcome Collection in the Science Museum of London on February 10th, 1658. Mm-hmm. And they have it still. That's really the story.
Yeah.
And, so that makes me wonder a little bit about whether or not any of this is real, right? Because they got other people saying the same stories,
yeah,
you know, about these things happening. And I don't know. It's so piecemealed, right? Everything's always found this way. This is my problem. So I have issues with this because I feel like maybe this is why there's so little recorded actual results of doing these things, because we don't really know what we're doing. Like, we're reading these manuscripts that came from who knows where, you know? And I don't know. Like, I just,
I think based off of what I know about history and mm-hmm. based off my personal experience,
mm-hmm.
I 100% believe they were doing what they said they were doing.
Okay. I think that they were trying to, and that Kelly was full of shit and pretending, but at some point,
a lot of people say that.
No. But at some point, because those things look for an in,
uh-huh.
right? Like the bad ones, like, yeah, look for a way in. Then they started actually showing up.
Yeah.
And then they started taking them on this wild goose chase that mm-hmm. cost them their reputations and their lives, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? That makes more sense to me.
But this happens.
It does happen.
This happens. And that's why it's legitimate. Like, to me, it's proof of legitimate contact, because this happens.
Sure. I'm just saying, I don't think they were in contact with what they thought they were in contact with.
Exactly. 100%. And I honestly, from my perspective, like, there's basically two perspectives that people have on this. That Edward Kelly was a scamming charlatan mm-hmm. and made the whole thing up. But that doesn't explain Edward Kelly did not have the mind to pull out the complex puzzles that the world's foremost cryptographer could solve, right?
Sure. No, I'm saying
there's no way some scammer charlatan would be able to make that kind of stuff when he's dealing with
the more scamming charlatan demons.
Yeah.
You know,
I think of course those things could do, you know, because for me personally, you know, John Dee was the only person alive on the planet then, and probably since, that could have received that.
I mean, it was custom tailored to him, right?
It was custom tailored, because what does Enochian magic deal with? It deals with politics, geography, mm-hmm. and cryptography, right?
Right.
Exactly. His specialties.
Right.
Yeah. Very much his system. Yeah. You know?
And it's just, I think it's a cautionary tale.
Yeah. And how would Edward Kelly be able to pull that out to a mega mind like John Dee? You know, how would he be able to mislead him?
Well, okay. I mean, we can say this if we're asked those questions, and we got to be real about it. Like, people, when they have a goal, sometimes they're willing to overlook obvious bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, especially back then, it's like harder to tell, you know, this, like, whatever he said, all these languages, ciphers, whatever he came up with, you know, we're just basing it on his word when we already know the guy's a forger and a fraud and a launderer and all these things. And that doesn't mean that he's not psychic. I'm not even sure that would be psychic.
I say that Kelly was not smart enough to develop that system.
I mean, what was the system? I mean, the system is, it's not even accurate though.
Right? What do you mean it's not accurate?
Isn't it, there are parts of it that are wrong?
Yes. Every machine has its flaws, you know?
Got it from angels. It should be pretty right. I don't know. I'm just saying, I think that angels are not it. I mean, what angel is going to tell you to have gay sex and then also swap wives? Give me a break.
I don't believe that they're angels either.
Like,
I think,
dude, how did that not hit? See, that's the problem. How did D not say what? Hang on, angel. What are you talking about? Like,
well,
come on. Like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
The problem.
So this, I think, is one of the, I think him being wrapped up in the heat of it, in the midst of it, he's not thinking ahead. He's not thinking big picture. He's just following the synchronicities.
He got Pavloved.
Yeah.
He got trained.
He's not looking at the big picture that, like, everybody around him is struggling and he's destroying everybody's lives. He doesn't see that happening. And he also isn't too, like, he's not, he doesn't have the perspective of history that we have, right? He didn't know about the Gnostics being massacred in Jerusalem because they were listening to these entities. He didn't know about, Iamblichus hadn't been translated yet.
Yeah.
He hadn't read.
But this is a repeated story.
Yeah.
Right? This is like these things that they're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
This is not the only encounter in history about this.
No. There's a group of Gnostics during, you know, the Gnostics that held the Book of Enoch to such importance. They listened to these spirits and they went to Jerusalem and got massacred.
I just remembered the information I got that one time.
Yeah.
Which is the same as what they had got, right? With those things that were like from above that came down and just hovered over.
Yeah.
Right. Is it the same thing? But supposedly the same entities.
I think so.
Right.
That's why I was excited for this episode, because now you can see in perspective what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So
when you say that stuff too, problem. And why I like look at, but why I look at you and why I sometimes get hostile.
Why?
What?
Because you're talking to not me, but the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. To the things.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Why I start calling them liars and deceivers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always stressful for me. I'm like, what? I'm just repeating what I'm hearing.
Because you don't see that. And then you look at what happened with Joseph Smith, you know?
Well, now I have a whole new take on that. Like, what?
He was using the exact same method
as
John Dee.
Like, what?
The exact same method. And he's pulling, like, angel languages out of
Native American
scrying. And, yeah.
Yeah.
And
Jesus was an American.
And John Dee, what he was convinced he was doing, right, was starting the new religion, rectifying the new religion, just like Joseph Smith.
Wasn't there something about, you know, fireballs and cosmos, something or other, like some kind of end times?
Yes. So John Dee's angels, they basically wanted him to unleash them from the watchtowers so that they could trigger the apocalypse.
That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary for me. That's scary. Because I did
these things,
not
these
know
things,
that.
So that's what happened to the Gnostics during the destruction of the Second Temple.
So I definitely didn't know that either.
The Gnostics during the destruction of the Second Temple, they thought it was going to be, these things told them that it was going to be the apocalypse.
Okay. So then we can say, I can say
that. So they went there and got massacred.
I can say.
Because they thought they were waiting for these things to come out of the sky and save him and create the new kingdom. They never did, and they got killed by the Romans.
Yeah. So I can say then that people are told that stuff by something.
By something,
whatever
right?
it is.
And what were those angels trying to do to John Dee and Edward Kelly? Get them to walk into politically unstable Europe
and cause war.
Get killed by
and cause royals, wars. Yeah. Like, I mean, literally. So, yeah. And I mean, I got information like that.
And then what did Joseph Smith do?
Oh, he did the same shit.
Did the same, caused this huge uproar in the Midwest, like absolute chaos.
Yep, he sure did.
Getting entire groups of people ran out of, massacred, ran out of town, locked up.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, but see, the difference is when we did it, I knew right away that they're full of shit. Like, I know that. Like, I know. Like, it's not even, I'm just telling you what.
But John D. didn't listen. Mm-hmm. Edward Kelly knew too, but John D. didn't listen. I am armed with something that John D. is not armed with, is a perspective of history.
Right. Also, the fact that I'm like, no, this is nonsense. Yeah. Like, this is lies. Yeah. Okay. Because I can tell that is one thing I, for some reason, I have that ability. And I know immediately, like, what are you talking?
And I just humor it. And so then what are these things that we're talking to, right? Oh. Celestial spirits.
Sure. Yeah.
What was John D. talking to? What did he think of celestial spirits? Celestial spirits,
right? Yeah. Which are like prisoners. Then they're, you know.
So they're access that John D., what did we learn in the Anatomy of Magic Circle episode? Mm-hmm. That he was using planetary magic. Mm-hmm. Just with ciphers, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, so clearly you can get a hold of these things, but I would never suggest
to listen. Actually, something I learned today, this is going to be really interesting. You want to know what John D. titled one of his treatises about these things?
No.
Something, the terrestrial spirits. Mm. He called them terrestrial spirits when he wrote about them. That's where Iamblichus calls them. Yeah.
Right? So the problem is that they give you information that is possibly accurate.
Possibly.
Mixed with inaccurate.
Yeah, they're good at triggering synchronicities. They can make supernatural stuff happen, but they largely are misleading. Mm-hmm. And they coincide you, and they've always got this story of a cataclysm or an apocalypse.
And that you need to help them.
Yeah.
That you're special. That you're going to be the one. That you are supposed to unlock them.
That's how they got John D. That's how they got John D.
See?
That's how they got him.
Nice try, guys. No. Yeah, no. So definitely it's doable to reach them, but it's not that. Yeah. Like, so.
Well, I think everybody. So I think that all these people have been able to reach this class of spirits, in different ways.
Okay,
right. There's not one way to get a hold of them.
No, because it's
Where and one of the weird things though is that Enochian magic and the Enochian angels and Enochian reconstruction, like there is a really big branch of magic, right? Like a lot of people practice it. Thelemites especially, Golden Dawn, and then
That makes sense to me.
Yeah. And then I used to hang out with just like Enochian purists that were just like, I practice the way that John D.
Are they crazy like John D.?
Well, that's the thing. They all report glowing experiences with these things that they're calling on.
For how long?
They don't report that these things are taking them on a wild goose chase, trying to get them to start the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Let them out. Like, let me out, you know? I've never heard anybody that works with Enochian angels, like, talk about that.
What are they trying to get from them?
Huh?
What is the goal?
Well, you can use them for magic, knowledge, like, just normal magic stuff, you know? Can you give me something? Can you give me some knowledge? Like, blah, 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 you know? Just, like, spirit, like, normal spirit stuff, right?
Right.
So, and then I've had experience with the Enochian angels through reconstruction, right? Okay. And that was very like, you know, here's some money. Okay.
Mean demons.
This is the first no, that was a different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So these ones that we're talking to, these are the first time that I've got these things, you know, basically telling me that I need to let them out of the star prisons.
Yeah.
In order to.
That it was you're born for this kind of
crap. Save them from the Archons or whatever it is, you know?
Whatever. Yeah. The Yeah, those things.
They said archons. They said archons. Because when they said archons, and that's when it clicked with me that
I said that word.
That word. Because when they said,
because I know archons, what those are, and I don't remember ever saying that. Like, I mean, I think I know what those are. I think they're like some kind of overlords of
they're not
humanity or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know, the Watchers, something like that.
Yes,
I don't know, but I don't remember that at all. But that that suspects me. Like, I feel like this is just, it's just a goose chase they're trying to get you on. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't trust any of it.
So I think people get in contact with him. And they get in contact with him all throughout history. And like, what's the utility of them? What's protection against them? Blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But the commonality here is that I don't know exactly what Joseph Smith was doing. The commonality, and then I can assume that the Gnostics were trained, like, you know, these are trained mystics in a time where basically there's large cults of mystics, right? Yeah. And what's going on during that time, Hellenistic astrology, right? Yeah. And you see in the surviving Gnostic religions, they have a huge planetary component, like Mandeanism and Manichaeism.
Yeah.
They have a huge planetary component to them, right? So you can make this assumption that these multiple times in history that people get in contact with these things and that something bad happens,
right?
There is a planetary component to it.
Sure.
So astral magic, planetary magic, that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe the reason why people say glowing things about it is the same reason that Edward Kelly and John Dee at first were doing the same, is because they were getting information that they thought no one else was getting.
Yeah.
And that it, for the average magician, maybe it takes longer for that kind of change to occur where it starts to really be misleading. But perhaps maybe it's just like the dynamic of us that it went really fast.
Well, yeah, I mean, Joseph Smith did it by himself. Iamblichus is aware of these things.
So he
must, I'm not saying Iamblichus did it.
No, not Iamblichus. I'm saying Joseph Smith. What did he do? I mean, how do we know? Like, he just could have just said that and like never really happened.
Okay. You know? So there's a thing, like, you're able to recognize when somebody's doing, like, as somebody that practices magic.
Yeah.
There's certain things that you recognize, like, that's
the magic.
You're doing fucking magic.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Just like the same way you're able to identify, like, you're not doing magic. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like the same way it's like the Latter-day Saints, like Mormon, like how that shit was made.
Weren't they all hopped up on cocaine from the Coca-Cola company? I mean, come on.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like that
Joseph Smith was a Freemason that practiced scrying and was talking to angels.
Mm-hmm.
That is
on drugs.
Magic.
Or
that guy's doing magic. I don't care whatever way you want to paint it.
He can say that.
He's doing that.
Sure.
Every part of that screams magic. He's scrying. Sure. He's got an angel language.
How do the people that
he's got a channeled text?
Like, though?
This is a
magic. Have you read it?
That's basically I have. I've got a Book of Mormon up here because it is I'm convinced that is an occult tome.
It is fun.
You read some of the symbols in there. You read, like, my first time reading the Book of Mormon, I was like convinced. I was like, there's alchemical symbolism in here. Like, I was like, dude.
Have you seen like the cover of it?
He's got, because he was a Freemason, he's got the Masonic imagery in there. Dude, this is so funny. This is our Anaki magic episode, and we're getting into my like most unhinged conspiracy theory about the Latter-day Saints and how they're like occulted as hell.
Oh my, hello.
Yeah. I have
friends that are Mormons, man. I went to school in Utah for my undergrad and grad.
I'm always like, for the audience or whatever, I like the Orthodox churches, you know, like Catholic, East Orthodox, Coptic, Ethiopian, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm always giving the Protestants crap. Like, that's the one I want. I don't know. That's just how I am about that, except for the Mormons. I'm like, those guys got something figured out.
Interesting.
That I love Mormons.
I
love them as people.
I
respect the religion. The religion is an actual real religion where they like have
like rituals and stuff.
And absolutely. Rules that they follow.
They
and,
sure do.
Yeah.
And I, let me say, I am not talking smack on Mormons, because I
has like a real religion.
They're the nicest people. Honestly, like my time in Utah going to school was like the best. And I was probably, I probably traumatized a lot of my classmates.
Yeah.
Because of my outward, like, you know, like other world views, you know, outside of their own. I remember a lot of them being like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, I forgot I was going to school with a whole bunch of Mormons.
Yeah.
They were really, they made me feel very welcome and accepted. So I cannot say anything bad about them. The religion, some of the offshoots of it are a little nuts to me.
Yeah, of course. All religions. All religions have bad things
in them. No, all of them do. Yes. We all have our outliers that are the crazy fundamentalists.
It's just with Protestants, I barely, like American Protestants, especially, like, I don't even recognize that as religion.
What does that mean? What are you talking about? Give me an example of what denomination you're talking about.
I mean, especially non-denominational, but American Protestants, where it's basically like you're in a room and you're reading scripture and you're lecturing people on scripture, and then maybe like you're yelling about it. Like, that's not religion to me. Like, where's the ritual? Where's the ceremony?
I grew up Baptist. I don't remember having any. Because America getting baptized, I don't remember any rituals.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. It's like missing like all the core components of religious practice. You know?
Pentecostal has some stuff.
Like, where's their mystics? You know, why don't they turn out mystics? You know, religions turn out mystics.
That's
what happens because they have religious practices, and then the people, because they have a religious practice, then people have spiritual experiences, and then they're like, oh,
but then they're not in control of it, so what? They don't want to perpetuate that.
And it's like American Protestants, though, they don't turn out mystics. No. They turn out, you know, celebrity crazy preachers
that don't help people in hurricanes. Joel Osteen.
Joel Osteen.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
You know.
But so it's like I'm totally biased here. Like, this is ridiculous. I'm rambling about Protestants now. I need to stop. Yeah.
No, but like,
I'm usually not vitriolic towards religions, but Protestants are the one that like.
No, it's certainly not me this time. No.
It's like the ex-Catholic in me just like gets so riled up about like Protestants,
Well, I just take issue with anybody that claims that they know all the answers and everybody else is wrong, because that just discounts anyone that existed prior, right? All those people are just damned to hell, okay? Anybody that's geographically located elsewhere that isn't in contact with those ideas are all doomed to hell. And none of that makes any sense to me, and I think it's nonsense. It would be much nicer if we could all just say, I believe this, and that's what I believe, and you're free to believe whatever you want.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be great.
That's my thing. That's like the biggest issue I personally have with Christianity is the proselytization and evangelizing. You're supposed to have an experience,
personal, right?
Yeah.
So like, you shouting at me about your Bible stuff is not helping. Like, it's off-putting. It's like my religion's personal and yours should be too. So
I don't actually have a problem with Christianity. The only time it like bugs me is like the evangelizing.
Christians don't do that.
Maybe. I mean, it's built into their faith. It's at that very foundation of their religion.
There's some people that are just like very kind and forgiving and understanding that you're maybe not on the same path, and they'll pray for you. And they'll keep it to themselves about it. That's
exactly
great.
Exactly. It's like not all Christians, man. Not all Christians, but the...
No, I know some good ones.
Yeah, we got to get off the Christian rant. I really don't like to do that.
I know you don't.
I don't know what got into us.
Probably it was the demons. The demons are out.
The knocking.
They're getting
the knocking angels.
I'm sure we'll have some comments.
But yeah, so this is the absolute, like...
It's a soap opera.
This is like one of the most amazing stories in the occult. So it definitely wasn't a deep dive in how to practice this magic. No. That is an animal. This is so Enochian magic, like if you're trying to practice it, it's probably some of the most complex magic you can get into. So if you're into like being a super dork magician, like this is for you, dude. Yeah. No, they're like literally like you'll meet Enochian practitioners. Like, I got into this because this was like, it was like puzzles and like, you know, the most complex, like crazy stuff I saw in Magic, and that's why I got into it, which is like, if that's how you have fun, you're gonna love this stuff. Sure. But
I mean, yeah. Did you just hear everything you're saying?
Well, but yeah, that's what I'm saying though. I don't think that, I think the spirits that people get into contact with today,
yeah,
do not operate the same as the ones that screwed up Dean Kelly's life, right? I don't think so.
What do you mean? Because they would have definitely done the same thing to you if you had listened.
What?
They told you almost the same exact stuff.
I wasn't getting in contact with Knocking Angels, though. I wasn't.
I don't know what we're getting in contact with.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Somewhere out there in the ether.
Yeah.
Somewhere out there, there's some things that just people can get in contact with.
Sure.
And I don't know if people are still getting into contact with them with Anaki and Magic or not, because this story doesn't keep repeating itself. Anaki Magic is a really popular form of magic, and you don't see people having the same experience as Dean Kelly. But when me and you started getting into contact with these celestial spirits that I found in the Arabic grimoires, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then this familiar story, they started feeding us this story that I was very familiar with.
And I just sound like a bunch of nonsense to me. And I was just in disbelief as I was saying it.
Yes. And this is why I was getting like manic and crazy about it. And I really identify with D because of it. You know, I really do. Yeah. Because I sympathize with him because his weakness, the reason his life was destroyed was because of his ambition.
Yeah.
Right? He wanted to do the right thing.
Yeah.
He wanted to do things for God. And he wanted to reunite Europe. And he wanted to reunite the church. And he wanted success for him and his protege, Edward Kelly, and his family and that kind of stuff. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody, but he was too ambitious and blinded by his ambition that he destroyed lives and put people in danger.
Poured his wife out, you know?
And yeah, hurt people and that kind of stuff. And I think that's really the warning on D's story. Like what you take away, I take away personally from D, you know?
It's the ambition.
Is that inside? Like ambition can just
blind you.
Lives.
Yeah. It can blind you to the truth of what's going
on. Well, especially in the occult. Especially in the occult.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think just like religion can too.
Yeah.
So people, you know, it's the same. It's just different practices, right?
Yeah.
People get deluded by what they perceive to be some kind of divine encounter.
Yeah.
Which, let's be honest, like,
well, it makes me so likely. So this development, like, this story has always been like near and dear to my heart. I've always loved this this story ever since I got into the occult, you know. But as I learned about what happened with Joseph Smith, as I learned about what happened with the Gnostics during the Second Temple, as I discovered what Iamblichus has to say, and then as we've been having these experiences with these spirits that are clearly trying to
manipulate,
get us to cause an apocalypse, it throws into question to me all apocalyptic literature.
Yeah, I mean
St. John's apocalypse, all cataclysm apocalypse literature is thrown into question to me, because I am fully aware of a class of spirits that feed this mythology and feed this story to mystics and magicians to mislead people, right?
Yeah.
I'm fully aware of it, right? And who is writing those books? Who wrote St. John's Apocalypse? Who wrote it? Obviously a mystic, because they're speaking in mystic language. They're speaking in visionary language.
Oh, is this the Revelation that we're talking about? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Obviously a mystic.
Yeah, it doesn't fit with,
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, like, it throws into question all these myths, all these stories we have. I mean, even the Anunnaki, right? Are these coming from people who are in touch with these things that keep popping up in history? They keep popping up to people that are trained, that have sight, that know how to conjure, that know how to talk to spirits.
I mean, let's look at, you because know, it's history a, it's repeats the same itself story over and over again, yes. Right? We never learn from our mistakes. History, you know, you can't forget it or you'll so repeat it. Called, it. That's what's happening over and over, is it's just repeating. It's always over the same things. It's always over power, money, and religion, right? Yeah. Like, that's what it's about. So every but generation never, has their but, own
so stuff yeah, going so on. It's like it's like one thing that this happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
This story, or if you look at, you know, the Ginza Raba from the Mandeans, it happens in the Ginza Raba too. And you look at this story that keeps getting repeated, and it keeps promising this cataclysm that's going to happen to these mystics that are getting in touch and writing this literature, right?
Yeah.
It keeps promising this cataclysm, and it never happens, and it destroys the people that write that literature and get in contact with these things, right? And so it would be one thing if the cataclysm did happen, if one of these things actually did happen, but it never does.
Right.
So the only thing that I could assume about apocalyptic literature is that it's coming from people that are being misled by these things.
Okay, well, what is like the purpose of, what is one of the biggest like wins you could get in life, is to be present, right? Be presence, like to actually be able to be present and stay in the moment.
Yeah.
If you are constantly talking about the end, the end times, the rapture, the, Armageddon, whatever, you're not living in the present and you're not living your life. You are constantly in your head in the future, and you're not able to participate in life the way that you're supposed to.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, of course, like, and then, how do we distract a whole bunch of people? Buy that shit right there.
Look at what happens to people that use, like, Revelations, for example, as the core of your faith.
What I'm talking about.
Like Revelations Christians that are standing on a street corner performing the most antisocial, antisocial behavior, shouting at people, being fearmongers, sowing fear, right? And hate. What do the archons want? You know, like
exactly.
If you're gonna fall down this line of thinking and theology where there's like, you know, Satan and evil, and you know this is his planet, and you know, demons feed off fear, and you're sitting out there sowing fear, then you're an agent
of the demons.
Yeah, yeah.
You're an agent of evil.
I mean, for me, this story and seeing it repeated and seeing that people can get in contact with these things, and that when they do get in contact with these things, they feed them this mythology, and it inspires fear, it inspires anxiety, and it destroys lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, I've just been, like, the past few months, just... I've never liked apocalyptic literature.
I think it's fun.
Yeah, I've always thought Revelations did not belong in the Bible. I always thought it was Gnostic dribble.
My favorite book,
like these past few months, I'm like, really, my eyes are opened to, you know, what, like, the entire genre.
Yeah.
It's like, this is all
misleading. It's misleading, you know? On purpose to create fear and power struggles and, you know, panic in people so that they are not enjoying their lives. They're not present, and they are able to justify bad behavior based on some made up thing that they believe is going to happen. And that's, I see it constantly all the time. And, you know, it's gross. And I do think that that's probably what it is. I do think you're right. I think that it's on purpose to keep people off the path of actually understanding their true divinity and being one with spirit. It's about having you fight amongst yourselves, because division, right?
It's appealing to hubris and pride. I mean, how many times does a cult leader like get a message and convince his cult to kill themselves because it's going to be the end, right? Because like, what is this message? Who does this message really appeal to? This message is appealed to somebody that's got a savior complex, that thinks that they're special, that has a sense of pride, that, you know,
believes they're better than everybody else,
self-important, you know, and like, that's the weakness that like
narcissism
that it gets to you in, and it can mask itself. It can mask itself as God's will, you know.
Yeah,
it can be like,
right. That don't make no sense, you know. Just be logical for a second. Why would any of that make sense?
Yeah,
it doesn't. I mean,
on a long enough timeline, everybody's gonna die. Yeah, that's fine.
You should.
But this,
Your end will come.
Genre, the genre of literature and how it stirs people up into zealotry and
fiends, like absolute fiends.
Yeah, this like self-destruction and that kind of stuff. It's it's blindingly apparent to me now, and I think it. John Dee's story is the perfect example of it.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
because John Dee's, you know, road to hell was paved with the best intentions. You know,
isn't that a saying? Yeah, the road to hell is paved with the best intentions. That is true. It is true. If you lose sight of if you get taken for a ride, you got to stay critical. Can't just take everything you.
And this is why it's important to know history and study so that you can recognize this stuff.
Reading,
like when we were interfacing with those spirits, could you imagine if I wasn't familiar with those things?
I mean, like I can't imagine that you would have bought that.
We'd be fucked.
No,
we'd be fucked.
Oh, I wouldn't do it. I was like, this is nonsense. Like I was like. Really now, like, but that's, no, like it was such nonsense to me. And I just couldn't believe I was hearing. It was ridiculous. But I at another time where science isn't so prevalent, where my life experience isn't so robust, right? Perhaps I have a hard time seeing that. But I have to admit that probably there's some circumstance to where I could have bought it. But not today, Satan. Mm-hmm. Not today. You know what I mean? Yeah. No way. I didn't even know that those were stories that were given to other people. Like, because it sounded so fantastical. Like, so just ridiculous. Like, it sounded like some freaking, I don't even know, fan fiction.
This is why. Yeah, this is what I love about this dynamic, because it's like...
It's like, I'm blind, because
it's because you're blind. It's like, I mean, like, that's the point of this dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Like,
You're, like, very well read. You have all of that research and all of that insane amount of knowledge about historical texts, and I don't. I just have practical experience, right?
We can identify this... Like, we're able to identify this stuff, like, lifetime, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you did. I'm just, like, I came out of that, and I'm, like, okay, I'm waiting for you to just, like, scold me about, like, what kind of bullshit was that? Like, and then you're, like, you don't know, and start telling me, and I'm, like, shut up. No way. Like, because that's just, like, who believed that? Like, it was so, like, it wasn't, like, exciting for me. Like, ooh, it's corroborated. It's, like, people bought that? Like, wow, that's so ridiculous. But then again, I guess the timing is hundreds and hundreds of years earlier or something.
Well,
what we
have the benefit of is, you know...
Knowledge?
Yeah, exactly. Like, we have more access to historical record and accurate information. So, like, we can see the pattern, right? John Dee couldn't see the pattern. He had 4,000 books. Like, how, you know... Hey, how lucky would you have been if, like, one of those books was, you know, any of the information, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's nothing to cross-reference it with at that time either, really, like, to debunk it. There's no people out there trying to debunk things, explain it away with other things. Back then,
He was in a vacuum, you know, like, in his own world. He was the smartest man in the world, and, like, he didn't see it coming, you know?
Well, that is the danger of being that smart. You start to get stupid at a certain point. You do.
Yeah.
Because you take for granted that you're the smartest person around. And then you think you know everything.
Yeah.
And this is the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, where you start to become one of the Dunning-Krugers. And you forget that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
So cautionary tale, if anything, I'd say. Is the story
fascinating?
Also, don't let people sleep with your wife. Like, that's not an angel. Like, what? That right there just is like, dude, bro, you have lost your mind at that point. Do you think that an angel is telling you to do this? I would be very suspicious at that point, at least, you know. But cautionary tale.
Yeah.
I guess just because you're a crook doesn't mean you can't have some ability to. Let demons talk to you.
Yeah, it's par for the course. I don't know what they are. I still don't know what they are. I'm not going to say they're demons. Definitely not going to say they're angels.
They're not angels. Yeah. That's For sure.
I think most people, we call them the Enochian angels, but I think most people kind of agree, like, these aren't really angels. You know? Yeah. We don't know what they are, but.
I don't care. I don't want to know if they're telling you to do dumb stuff like that and sell all your belongings and, like, go get almost beheaded by some foreign power because you tell them that they're stupid. Dude, like, unreal.
If a spirit was telling me to sell my stuff for money, oh my God. Like, why do you think I'm conjuring you?
This is like place? It's like your drug dealer it's talking like to you.
You know? Reason.
It's like, I see Tyrone in the background, you know? Like, I see, like, you gotta go sell your stuff, like, scratching himself. That's what I see. I see you fiending. Yeah. That's what I see. I don't see an angel, okay? Yeah. I see somebody with very bad intentions trying to really disrupt your life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, caution, you know, mm-hmm. I guess. Proceed with caution.
Yeah, proceed with caution.
Definitely, I would read this. What books do you have here that, okay. What are these?
This one, so I think The Life of John Dee, mm-hmm. I don't know how to pronounce the original author's name because it's like missing vowels. It's like W.M. Alexar Eaton, but translated from the Latin of Dr. Thomas Smith, The Life of John Dee. So this was written in the 1700s about John Dee. It's basically a biography. You can find the whole story in this book. Start to back about John Dee and Edward Kelly. I think this is the one that most people work off when they're doing like biographies or when they're writing about Enochian magic. All the details are in this one, and it's a pretty short read.
Yeah, it's really small.
I think I busted it out in like 2 hours this afternoon or something. But yeah, definitely a good one. And then John Dee's diaries are out now. A lot of them are published. You can read those if you want to get a little more in depth. That's how a lot of Reconstructionists reconstruct Enochian magic. You can go on to the London Library and search through. They've got scans of all the manuscripts that they have from John Dee.
That handwriting.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people can't read that anymore because they stopped teaching cursive.
Oh, cursive. Yeah, yeah.
So maybe you have to learn cursive, but you know, hey, another barrier to entry.
But there's absolute ton of material on the history. If you want to get into Enochian magic itself, I'm going to recommend Lon Milo Duquette again. If you're a beginner, Lon Milo Duquette's great for Thelema and Enochian magic. If you want to learn from somebody. So, yeah.
Just keep reading.
Yeah.
That's my advice. And, don't believe anything that tells you to do stuff that compromise your morals.
Yeah, exactly. You know who you are.
Yeah, know thyself.
Yep. Anyways, thank you guys for joining us. We will see you again next week.
Night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.